Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Dele Rosalie's Premier League debut!
Got it lost under his feet, and it's come for Lamella!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. I am your host, Greg, and we are here to talk about an exciting Spurs win that has catapulted Tottenham back into the title race. I've got everybody here tonight, so let's get started. Leading us off is our numbers expert, Michael Cayley. Michael, how are you doing in this new title race world that we're all struggling to deal with?
I feel good. We have a chance of winning the title. It's something like 10 or 15%. That's nice. Those are numbers.
What is Arsenal's chance to win the title? Just, you know, for all of our kids playing at home.
Oh, yeah. No, it is somewhere in that those margins where you're talking about, like, at the beginning of the season, the likelihood of Crystal Palace winning the title. It's very nice.
I wish Vince was here so he could put an Italian chef hat on and, you know, smack, kiss his fingers for us. Next up, we have our former most recent podcast host to go to London. We have Brian. Brian, how are you doing in this drastically altered world of expectations for Spurs fans?
I don't like it. It makes me too happy.
You think we should sign Ryan Mason back, stick him in midfield?
Yep, I think if we can bring back Ryan Mason, Jake Livermore, Michael Dawson, I think I'd feel a lot more secure in what the future holds for Tottenham Hotspur.
Well, we all know that Kevin believes that Jake Livermore is the final piece to Tottenham's European Cup challenging form. So,
maybe at least if we had Nabil Bentaleb back, we'd have a halfway decent left back.
We would. And speaking of which, what a great transition, Brian. We have, straight from London, England, we have our most recent visitor across the pond. We have Ben Daniels. Ben, how does it feel to be back in America?
Jet lagged, horrible. I had to go to work today. It was all very bad. last week was very good.
Well, go ahead, Ben. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I got to go to White Hart Lane.
Yes,
and
you did.
Interact with all the terrible Spurs fans from England.
Way to endear us to our audience. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the game first. Let's talk about the good stuff first, Ben. Then we'll get to your experience after that. How did people react to Brett Rainbow when you went over there? I want to talk about what's really important about this week. How did people react? Were people just on the streets asking you about Brett Rainbow?
I mean, everyone wanted to know, you know. They could just sense that I had some connection to this mystery figure. You know, I couldn't walk 10 feet around White Hart Lane without somebody accosting me, asking for details on the Brett Rainbow conspiracy.
Do his eyes?
Is he on Twitter? they wanted to know if he was on Twitter yet.
I think he's only
all of them was his LinkedIn, and, you know, people were satisfied, but unhappy.
He needs to growth hack his brand. But Ben didn't only see the Brett Rainbow faithful when he was across the pond. He saw a remarkable 4-0 Spurs win, another incredibly complete performance that we're seeing with a regularity that, as a Spurs fan, frankly, makes me highly uncomfortable. I mean, Brian, have you ever seen Spurs regularly thump teams like we're seeing this year? We're just 4-0 is not an uncommon scoreline for Spurs. What is happening? What happened to us?
I honestly don't know. I mean, we've talked about that before, that, you know, this team is just beating the teams that they should, and not really just beating them, but beating the crap out of them, which is something that good teams do. Like, this is what, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson's Manchester United teams did. They didn't just, you know, beat whoever, Sunderland 1-0. They went and they kicked the crap out of Sunderland, you know. And I think this is our sixth or seventh game this season we've scored at least 4 goals in. So, I mean, it's an impressive from us in terms of the attacking firepower that we have available to us, in that, you know, we're doing this with Harry Kane just having come back from injury. We are dealing this without, you know, our best left back, who's also kind of the guy that starts our attack. You know, it's a brand new world for Spurs, and I don't really understand how to live in it.
Michael,
yeah, I mean, you called.
Oh, go ahead, Ben.
I was just saying, you called it a remarkable 4-0 win, and I think the most remarkable part about it is how completely unremarkable it is to win 4-0 these days. It's just like it. It felt routine almost.
I think. Like, I mean, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, it was so complete.
Look, I was there. You were there. If you were there, you would know it was routine.
Well, I mean, there was, I forget which paper it was in England. I think it might have been The Guardian. That, like, the first sentence of their match report was essentially something to the effect of, Tottenham Hotspur didn't just destroy Bournemouth, they destroyed the idea that Bournemouth would even be able to compete in this match. And I think it could have gone even further and just, we destroyed the idea of Bournemouth. Like, they just, it didn't matter whether they were on the pitch.
You were on the South Coast after the match. Did there appear to be a Bournemouth, Ben?
I couldn't find it. I looked. I found a Brighton, which is similar, sounding at least. But no, I mean, I looked high and low and didn't see a Bournemouth. So, I saw a Portsmouth. I don't think
which rhymes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Did it regenerate, like in Doctor Who? Is that what, do you think Portsmouth used to be Bournemouth? Or is it, do you think we just wiped it off the face of the map?
Yeah, I think it's like, space-time has refolded itself and Bournemouth never existed, and everybody listening to this podcast are going to have no idea what we're talking about.
It's I don't know.
I mean, maybe that explains, like, it was why never Pompey Bournemouth. Wear red socks.
Yeah. If I guess the striking thing to me about this match was just how complete the performance was. And I know Bournemouth's, like, not very good and they're playing Jack Wilshere in a Premier League match in 2017, but it was, I think people were calling Spurs title contenders, best team in England, and that was before Chelsea lost the next day. I think it's pretty clear at this point Spurs have taken a step from where they were last year. Michael, I know last year we talked a lot about when one of the problems this team had is, like, we were great when plan A was, when everything was going according to plan, but we never really knew how to change it up. Is one of the things that's made this team so much better this year that we've been able to sort of play in different ways and shift the way the team works around? Obviously, we didn't have to adapt too much against Bournemouth, but given some of the injuries we've had this year, given the fact that Danny Rose, who might be the best left back in England, was out, given the fact that Eric Lamela has missed almost all the entire season, Kane missed significant minutes, you know, Toby has missed minutes at various points in time, we were missing Jan for a while. This team has managed to change shape, formation, adapt to different players. Is that what's really taken us forward this year, the sort of increased adaptability we've seen?
Yeah, I think the way I'd say this a little bit differently, it's not so much that we do different things. Like, you put on tape of pretty much any Spurs match, and you can see the things that Mauricio Pochettino wants to do. That, like, his vision is very much to sort of whatever opponent we come up against, we're going to have confidence and belief in our way of playing and do that. What the team has been able to do is to play good Spurs football with a lot of different lineups. We've been able to play good Spurs football with a non-traditional number 9 in Heung-min Son. We've been able to play good Spurs football with a back 3, with a back 4. We've been able to play good Spurs football even when one or even both of our fullbacks can't get up and down the pitch the way that you would expect would be required in a Pochettino system. So, like, we're still playing that style. It's not like we're really we're still just sort of banging plan A against teams, but it's working more often because we can execute something a lot like plan A with a lot of different personnel.
And we don't necessarily, I think one of the big differences this year is, while Moussa Dembélé is probably still our most important player, we don't seem as completely reliant on him as we did last year, which is a big change.
is the back three allows us to progress the ball with either Jan carrying it forward or Toby passing it forward, which allows us to progress through midfield through means other than Dembele. We can do a lot or up the flanks. It really changes things for us that we can do that. In this game, it was Dembele against Bournemouth, especially in the 4-2-3-1. We depend on Dembele, and he was amazing. So that's also fun.
I do not want to undersell how amazing Moussa Dembele is. It's just we are not quite as needing him to play well in every single match we play in order for us to win games like we were last year, which is nice.
But the thing about this match, as Michael said, was Moussa Dembele was transcendent. Like, watching him live was like a near religious experience. He was so good. Like, I just was awed.
I can't wrap my head around the fact that I saw, like, the one bad match he had in a Spurs shirt, and you got to watch that shit. Like,
well, I think we know the common denominator there.
Clearly. Your Arsenal-supporting wife, obviously, is the clear denominator
here. Obviously.
But were you able to gain a different appreciation for Dembele's game, like, seeing it in person, or was it just...
I mean, I've always loved Dembele. But you do get a sense viscerally of just how strong he is when you're that close to him. Especially when he's playing against a midget like Jack Wilshere. I mean, he is just effortless out there.
Let's get into that. I was going to save it for later, but since you brought it up. How much did you enjoy Spurs fans taking it out of Jack Wilshere? I don't know if you saw this because obviously you were over there, Ben, and being overseas, internet access isn't always what it is when you're at home. There were a couple journalists really like tutting Spurs fans. They were like, oh, how dare you make fun of a guy who's injured? Like, how dare you? Now, I think for the most part, Spurs fans really pushed back against that. And I think they were right to do so. But what was it like? Because Spurs fans really stuck it up his ass on Saturday. It was pretty brutal from what you could see on TV. Was it fun? Because it looked like a lot of fun.
It was probably the highlight of the match. I mean, so like, just for context, you know, watching like the warm-ups, nobody was paying attention to Spurs warming up. Everyone was abusing Jack Wilshere before the match started. It was just like relentless. And then throughout the match, anytime he touched the ball, it was, you know, I'm sure you heard it, it was cruel and delightful. But, I mean, the biggest thing about his injury was, A, it was his own fucking fault. But, B, the whole crowd erupted in the "he's done it again" chant, like, completely unprompted. It was no, like, it started somewhere and caught fire. It was, like, literally 33,000 people simultaneously got it in their heads that this needed to happen, and it did.
Okay, and first of all, like, no, that is great, but like, you don't think Spurs fans are going into a match against Jack Wilshere like not like sort of thinking what to do if he gets injured, which is like I don't want to put a number on it because that's Michael's job, but like, that's got to be over 50% possibility walking into that match. I mean
I'm sure it was a thought, but like, plenty of chance happened, you know, four players, four goals, four whatever, that didn't catch fire like this. And even when they did, again, it was like someone started it and then it moved throughout the stadium. This was like everybody, it was like a Jungian shared consciousness of,
God,
hating Jack Wilshere. Like, I can't describe it any other way, because it was like perfectly organic and simultaneous from every single person. There was like a moment when it happened that I was like, man, that's really just fucking mean. And then that moment passed very quickly, and I was like, this is amazing.
So, Ben, you have pledged in an American fraternity. You have seen George W. Bush get reelected. You have seen Donald Trump get elected. Was this the most savage thing you've ever seen with your own two eyes?
It was brutal. But I will say, and I said, I mentioned this on Twitter, the only thing bad about it is that it's the only thing that's given Jack Wilshere a sense of purpose in years. You know, like, I think he's the kind of guy who, like, gets off on that. Like, us booing him means to him that, like, he still matters.
And it didn't, like, motivate him, though. He was terrible.
Well, I mean, yeah, he was terrible. He is terrible. Bournemouth are terrible. And then he broke his leg. But, you know, the only remaining significance Jack Wilshere has as a human being is that Spurs fans hate him a lot. Like, that's all he has left. And, honestly, next time we see him, I want everyone to just ignore him completely. Like, everyone pull out their program or a newspaper and just start reading casually. And I think, like, that will crush him so much more fully to, like, the core of his being in a way that, as vicious as this chant was, it could never possibly
that,
go.
That is a savage move out of the Maryland basketball playbook. So good choice for that. Why? I want to analyze this a little bit because I think there's an obvious answer, but I think there's like a little deeper. Like, Brian, why do Spurs fans hate Wilshere so much? I know obviously he was like an Arsenal player and like, you know, he did that stupid chant once, but I think it's deeper than that. I mean, is it deeper than that, or am I just being... Am I thinking too hard about this?
Well, I think that chant is sort of like emblematic of everything that Spurs fans hate about Jack Wilshere, is that he's not just an Arsenal player. Like, he's an Arsenal guy. Like, he's born and raised Arsenal, you know, from the academy, was like the great hope of the team.
And
you
England.
Know.
I think that's a big part of...
Yeah.
We had to listen for so long about, like, this guy was going to be the next great English player. We were going to, you know, if you were an England fan, he was going to be shoved down your throat there.
Exactly. And like, and he's very vocally anti-Spurs. I mean, he conducts himself like an Arsenal fan, not just an Arsenal player. And so, you know, fans know how to give shit to other fans. this one happens to be on the pitch. And so, yeah, when you lead a parade in a what do we think of Tottenham shit, what do we think of shit Tottenham chant, like, you're going to get it.
Especially when you didn't even play back in that final. Like, God, what an asshole. He earned every inch of that. I don't care what any journal said.
Right.
Like, he earned every inch of that taunting.
Like, Benik Afobe was on the pitch. He's also an Arsenal guy. Nobody even acknowledged his existence. You know, it didn't rub anybody the wrong way. It's not just the fact that he's Arsenal. It's that he's Arsenal and a piece of shit. And
now, you attended this game with your wife, who is an Arsenal fan, who was kind enough to not wear Arsenal colors or cheer against Spurs. She was very polite in disguise. How did she react to this just savagery that surrounded her regarding Jack Wilshere?
I mean, she found it cruel, but also couldn't help but laugh. I mean, it really would have been hard not to in that moment. And, you know, I mean, she's an Arsenal fan, but, you know, she's not, you know, she doesn't like live in a hole. She knows what kind of person Jack is.
Incredible. Incredible.
Like, if it was Scott, she would have probably gotten upset and, like, tried to fight somebody, but it wasn't.
Let's talk about the real most important thing of the match. Brian, where in the pantheon of great Tottenham goals do you think Vincent Janssen's goal at the end of the match is going to rank?
I think right at the top, really. I mean...
Just above, like, Gazza's FA Cup semifinal free kick?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's up there. It's certainly one of the best I've ever seen. Yeah, it defies description, really. I can't even, like, the emotions that I felt. When he missed the first one, like, the first chance fell to him, and he hit it right into the keeper. I was like, ah, shit. And then it came back to him, and it was just the way he, you know, kicked the ball into the goal. It was beautiful, and I wept tears of expectancy, I guess, basically, because he fucking finally scored, and it was great. It was good. I'm happy for him.
Brian, I think you're missing, like, what makes this goal, like, truly special.
Was it Pochettino celebration?
No, it was the audacity of Vincent Janssen presented with a clear scoring chance. Instead of scoring, he passed the ball back to himself off the keeper just to, like, rub it in before he put the ball away. I mean, that was, like, for a guy who hasn't scored, just the ballsiest move I've ever seen.
I mean, he saw he knew Kane was going to get plaudits for his passing, and so he's like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to assist myself.
Right, I'm going to play watch a 1-2 this. With the keeper.
I mean, look, like, I don't want to get carried away. So, Michael, I want to take this to you. Like, having seen that goal, now that Vincent Janssen has scored from open play, will he surpass Messi and Ronaldo next year or the year after? I mean, what do you think is a rational expectation for Vincent at this point?
Yeah, I think that, like, that's really overstating it. I mean, if he scores one goal this year, then he scores one goal next year, then you expect him to score two, then three, then five, then eight. It's going to take him a while for the Fibonacci sequence to extend such that he scores, like, 300 goals in the league, but that will happen eventually. Just give him some time.
Do you know that this is going to be a Fibonacci sequence, though? This could be exponential growth. It could be one and then... I don't know how to but now, yeah, who knows?
Michael,
and then four, then 16. I think that's how exponential growth works.
those sound like numbers that could be exponentially bigger than each other. Michael, do you think we're going to be able to hold on to Vincent Janssen after this goal?
That's a great question.
I mean, Real Madrid is always on the lookout for another striker.
I mean, I thought Bournemouth were really impressed with his performance.
they're like Real Madrid, and that Real Madrid, I presume, have worn red and black at various points in their history, probably in the shape of a dragon.
That Bournemouth may regenerate into Real Madrid at any point.
After, I mean, they've turned into Portsmouth, which is, like, a more famous club, I suppose. So, yeah, it could be, like, another couple of regenerations through their cycle, but, you know, who knows? And if Christian Eriksen gives them another regeneration cycle, I mean, the sky's really the limit for Bournemouth, is, I think, what we really want you to take away from this podcast. I don't know.
In all seriousness, though, like, I think those were probably our highest, like, expected goal chances of the game. Like, the fact that it took two of them for him to put it in is, I mean, it's a little sad, but he scored, so that's nice, I guess.
There was, I know this is all anecdotal, stupid bullshit, but there were a little too many people, or a few too many on Twitter being like, oh, now that he scored, he's going to start to really kick on, and I'm like, fucking none of you watch Roberto Soldado play for Tottenham Hotspur. Like that's not how maybe that will happen, but it's not going to happen just because he scored that goal. Like, maybe that will, like, trigger some sort of psychological reaction that will let him get out of his own head, but probably not. I don't know. Ben, did you enjoy singing for him?
If Anton's problem was all in his head, like, he would be a much better player.
I mean, the argument for Vincent Janssen being better next year is he's had a year to acclimate to the league, and he has a better idea of, like, what's expected of him and how to score and play in England. You know, it'd be nice, and I think it's possible that he's a passable backup next year, but not.
Well,
because
if you look at him, the performances he put in the last three or four games, and I think we've said it here on the podcast, he's been much better these last, you know, these last few games.
He's creating some shots, which is not what he was doing earlier in the year.
I mean, he looked good playing up front in the 4-2-3-1. He looked less good up front in when we played the 3-5-2, but he does not look as lost as he did early in the season when we were relying on him as our only striker while Kane was hurt. Like, this second stretch of the season here where we had to play him or Son up top, he looked much more competent and much more confident in his game, and that he knew what he was doing in Pochettino's system.
I can confidently say that I fixed him. Like,
you shielding your wife's eyes from his badonkadonk?
I don't think my hands are big enough to block that view.
I mean, it's a big ass.
Yeah, I mean, it'd take like an eclipse, I think.
I was going to try and make another joke about this, but I think we should just move on. So this game was quite something, and it's with Chelsea's loss the following day. Spurs are now suddenly 4 points back of Chelsea with, I believe, 6 matches left to go in the league this year. And everyone's all of a sudden saying we're in a title race. Michael, throw some cold water on this. Are we in a title race?
I mean, yeah, we could win the title. It could happen. I think that the issue here is that, you know, 4 points back with 6 to play is absolutely within the normal range of a difference that could get overturned. The problem is primarily that Chelsea have a very easy run in. It's very hard to look at that schedule. The toughest match is against Everton and think that this team is going to drop a lot of points on the stretch, while Spurs have home matches, but still difficult matches against Arsenal and United, as well as a bunch of away matches at Leicester, at West Ham, at Palace, at Hull. Spurs have already taken the maximum number of points from home matches against bad teams. They don't have any more. Chelsea have at Everton versus Southampton. They've got 3 points home to Borough, home to Watford, home to Sunderland. Like, Spurs have a chance because anything could happen. Chelsea could lose a couple of those games, and things get very, very interesting very fast. But the reason that the projection systems are putting Spurs in more in the range of like 15% to win the title is that the schedule difference makes Chelsea's run in pretty easy.
Well, I mean, and think about this. Like, the most likely path to Spurs winning the title, correct me if I'm wrong, is we run the table, which not going to be easy, and Chelsea drop points in at least 2 games. They have to drop points in 2 games. And that's just, both of those feel like a bit of a tall order, like that we have to win every single one of our matches, which, you know, could happen, and that Chelsea will also drop points in 2 of that, which could happen, but both of those things happening feels like both are a little bit of a long shot, and both happening at the same time feels like a lot more of a long shot. And
I mean, you know, if we win all of our remaining matches, that matches the longest Premier League consecutive win streak, you know. So
wouldn't that be ironic?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that Chelsea did earlier in the season, and some other club, I think, probably before that.
Yeah. Arsenal. I would pour further cold water on that. Hot water, whatever. I'd pour further cold water.
There's talking about his ass right now. Go ahead.
Where we win the title is not that we win out. It's where we drop points in one game and Chelsea collapse. That's more likely than that we win out.
I mean,
you know, because teams drop points all the time. Chelsea lost to Crystal Palace.
That was the first dumb points that feels like they dropped all year. Like,
of course, but like, lots of good teams drop dumb points. A good team can drop dumb points 3 times.
A good team could like hypothetically lose to a relegated side 5-1 on the last day of the season.
I don't know what you're talking about, Ben. That sounds highly unrealistic. It's just very like, I almost hate that we're this close because I don't think we're going to win the title, but it's now you're like sort of like paying like, oh, what are Chelsea going to do? And like, I don't know. It's just, I kind of hate that we're so close because it feels so far away now that like, because we still need all these things to go right. And like you said, it could happen. Chelsea could fall apart. They could start, you know, dumb losses might begot further dumb losses, but you know, like Chelsea have just looked so solid this year that it feels incredibly unlikely.
The thing of it is like, to me anyway, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, Chelsea did all the things that they needed to do this year to win the league, and they put themselves in this position. And, you know, we've played amazing football at times, and, you know, we're just not quite there. And I'm not even going to worry about these next 6 games in the title chase because I care more about the FA Cup. Like this weekend, if the fixture against Chelsea this weekend, that's more important to me now. Like getting a trophy out of this season is more important because, you know, we've already done better than last year, or we have the same number of points as last year. We're probably going to exceed that point total unless the world just like ends over the weekend. And, you know, we're going to have a record points total. We're going to finish second in the league, and we're going to be in the Champions League again next year. And I think all those things are great, and I'm very happy with that, but I want a trophy now, so let's focus on that.
I said this last year, but there's a saying in American sports, flags fly forever, and, you know, there's maybe one other team that I followed in my life that I've enjoyed more than this iteration of Tottenham Hotspur under Pochettino, and I really want, before it ends or changes radically, the group of players changes radically, like, I want this group of players to win a trophy, like this year, next year, whatever, but I want them to win a trophy. And right now the clearest path to that is the FA Cup. And like you said, Brian, like, if we beat Chelsea this weekend, you know, I don't care what that says about the title race. It'd be nice if that, like, fucked with Chelsea's confidence or something, but I want to beat Chelsea so we can go beat Arsenal or Manchester City in the FA Cup final. And I want to see this team holding a trophy at the end of the year, because this team is good enough that when we look back at them in 10, 20 years or whatever, I want to be able to at least point to the FA Cup that they won, if nothing else.
So what about this instead? We play a bunch of backups in the FA Cup match and have everybody get red carded, injuring everybody on Chelsea. So that Hazard and Conte and Luiz and Costa and, you know, everybody is injured for the next six games.
I'm also fine with that strategy. Then we'll see how good Bamford really is, I suppose.
Yeah, he doesn't even play for them anymore.
Well, you'll never convince me of that, Brian. He'll be in their, like, under 21 team until he's like 60.
Lost his cheek is still there, I think.
Like, Eric Dier gave us a pretty good blueprint for that last year.
Moussa Dembele gave us an even better one.
Yeah. Except Dembele only took himself out of contention, not anybody on Chelsea. Saying that's an option. You know, like, let Kevin Vimmer get in there and just start breaking ankles. And that'll be his legacy to Tottenham Hotspur.
If you try to stick his thumb in someone's eye, stick your damn thumb in their eye. Like,
yeah.
Do it like Mourinho. Do it like Mourinho.
Yeah. I mean, I think this could be Sissoko's moment. You know, he just comes out there.
Moussa, we need you to injure every single player on Chelsea.
Yeah, all these Spurs videos are always talking about how Moussa Sissoko or Moussa Dembele is, like, the hardest guy on the team. Like, let's see some of that. Sissoko.
Yeah, earn your keep.
That's a good strategy. Do you think it'll work, Ben? Do you think that has a chance of succeeding?
I mean, it doesn't not have a chance of succeeding.
Well put. So yeah,
I mean, yeah, but also be great.
So let's look at the FA Cup final. Let's put Ben's strategy. Let's shelve that for when Spurs actually deploy it. It's a very Argentinian tactic, I feel like. But let's shelve that for until they actually deploy it and talk about if we're trying to win the game. I think the obvious problem walking into this match is Ben Davies. He is a major downgrade from Danny Rose. And frankly, the thought of him going up against Chelsea terrifies me. Michael, how do you see us approaching this match?
Yeah, I think that in a match like this, it's managers will do this. I think it's not unreasonable to sort of, like, worry about your biggest weakness and figure out ways to minimize that. And, you know, we saw Ben Davies have to play fullback against a good attacking team the last time played a good team against Liverpool. And that was very, very bad. And this is what makes me think it makes a lot of sense for Spurs to bring Wanyama back into the side, push Davies up into a wingback role where he's much less likely to be the last man of defense, and we can get some of his reasonably useful sort of, like, progressive passing out of the wingback position. You know, finding a way to hide Davies seems like one of the key jobs that the manager has going to this match. I think putting him at wingback is the one thing that makes most sense.
You know, I just remembered how we tried to mitigate that situation last time we played Chelsea, and I just started crying quietly to myself. If you don't remember, it was we played Kevin Vimmer at left back.
That was two times ago, first of all. Yeah, I think we can all agree that for whatever Ben Davies, like, deficiencies are as a left back, he is a better option than Kevin Vimmer.
Yes. So there's no way to go with that. Oh, and had we won that Chelsea match, we would be in first right now. Just raining on everybody's parade a little.
You really did spend some time in England this week, huh?
Oh, yeah. Can I talk about this for 1 second?
Sure.
So there was a moment in the match when we were 3-0 up, and the very salty, joyless English fans next to me were yelling at the folks in the park lane for singing, because what are you singing about? It's Bournemouth. Of course we're winning. This is nothing to be happy about. And it just made me very, very upset.
Ben, the most important thing about being a fan of an English soccer team is the absence of joy.
Yeah. So that last segment was brought to you by my interaction with those fans, I guess. Anyway, go on.
Brian, I mean, how are you feeling about sort of how Spurs are set up with the way we've been playing? I mean, we might have to get Son off so we can get Wanyama on. I mean, just how are you feeling about the team that we're taking into this match?
I mean, it's pretty much the first team minus Danny Rose. So, I mean, everybody else is healthy, and
R.I.P. Eric Lamella.
Yeah, but I mean, Son's been a pretty, you know, able deputy, or you know, this season. And I agree with Michael. I think that the strategy for us has to be minimize how often Ben Davies is defending one-on-one in space with Chelsea's wide players, and how often he is the last man back on defense, and instead, you know, bring in, you know, drop Eric Dier back into defense, bring in Wanyama, because that's the formation that we basically used when we beat Chelsea at the lane. And when Dembele and Wanyama effectively took N'Golo Kante out of the game. And I think that has to be the main focus, is if we can minimize Kante's impact on the game, and also find a way to prevent Hazard from, you know, getting any sort of reasonable chance, then we'll win. But that's easier said than done, I suppose, right?
Ben, are you utterly convinced we can't win this game, given that you spent time with your friends in the in White Hart Lane?
No. I mean, I think the Spurs side is as good as the Chelsea side we're going to come up against. You know, I would love if Danny Rose was there, obviously, but you know, all things considered, you know, there's an argument that we have been, since our early hiccups in the first part of the season, you know, the clear best team in England. And I don't think, you know, that's overstating the case. You know, Chelsea are a dangerous team, obviously, but I would put Spurs up against anybody in the world right now and feel like we had a shot at winning.
Even Atlanta United?
Well, let's not get crazy. I mean, a fully fit Atlanta United, you know, maybe not, but they're struggling a little bit with injuries to their striker, you know.
Oh God. I mean, Michael, do you see this as just being? I'm seeing this very much as maybe I shouldn't with Davies in there, but I'm seeing it very much like the last time we played Chelsea, where it's going to be who's better at finishing their chances, because I think it's going to be a real even matchup. Are you expecting something similar to that, or do you think Chelsea have an edge here?
Yeah, that's what I expect. I think that you know, I think that Chelsea's edge of having Eden Hazard matched up probably one-on-one with Eric Dier is probably somewhat larger than our edge, but it's pretty close. And, you know, Chelsea looked, you know, Gary Cahill is reportedly sick. I don't know.
God, everything's going so, Chelsea's way. This is so annoying.
But their system
PFA
is
team of the year member Gary Cahill, for the record. Let's give him his full correct title.
It's nice how Chelsea's third best center back was somehow one of the two best center backs in the Premier League. It's unusual, but I it is you wonder if, like, little changes in that system are going to create problems. They really did not look themselves when they were missing just missing Marcus Alonso against United. So, you know, that could be an issue for them. But it's hard not to see this as a very even match.
Does anyone here think – I mean, Brian, you saw us play there. The rest of us haven't. But does anyone think Wembley is going to play into this at all? I mean, everyone talks about Spurs – Wembley hoodoo. Like, I don't tend to put much stock in that, but like, I mean, theoretically a bigger pitch. I mean, does anyone worried about that in particular?
I thought we looked fine. The match I saw at Wembley, we played well. Like, we just, like, we didn't win. I mean, that was, but you know, it was the extra space in the, with the 3-5-2 or whatever we're calling it, 3-4-1-1. It works well. It gets the other team spread out, and if you're possessing the ball and knocking it around, it looks really good. I think it'll be fine. I'm not really worried about, you know, the Wembley pitch or the Wembley atmosphere, anything like that. It's a cup semifinal against a local rival. I think it's going to be a good match one way or the other.
All right, well, we'll all be living in terror, and at least next weekend we get to all chill out with a North London derby that won't be frustrating and scary even a little bit. I'm looking forward to engaging in my annual North London derby tradition, which is having Mai Tais early in the morning at Kaylee's house, which is, you know, just a great way to work up your nerves. Let's take one or two questions. We get Ben is dealing with jet lag, and it is late for us here in America. So let's take one or two questions before we leave. Our first question comes from noted internet terrorist Reno Wallabout. He wants to know which Spurs player insists that Vice City is the best Grand Theft Auto and has extremely hot takes about the best radio station. Brian, I feel like this is a you question.
I didn't even listen to the question. I'm sorry.
Okay, that makes much sense. Actually, he has a better question. Let's go with this one instead. Can Harry fit the entire FA Cup into his mouth?
No. Next.
Ben?
It just doesn't seem physically possible. I mean, it's open, but it's not like a snake with an unhinged jaw. Yeah, I'm skeptical.
Kayla.
I do like the image of Harry fitting the very top of the FA Cup into his mouth and then trying to figure out what to do the rest of it.
I mean, Harry Kane is essentially a very handsome Titan from Attack on Titan. So, like, I don't know. Their mouths open pretty wide. They eat lots of crap. Yeah, I think he could.
Don't they not have skin?
No, one of them doesn't have skin, Brian. That's the colossal Titan, Brian.
We win the FA Cup, and Harry just runs onto the field, grabs the cup, puts his mouth over the top of it, and it's like,
What do I do, girl? What do I do? Oh, there's
this
an image.
A silly podcast.
Someone who can draw and listen to our podcast, send us an image of Harry Kane eating the FA Cup, but not being able to completely fit it into his mouth. Mostly, but not completely.
Please don't do that.
No. I'm insisting.
I want that.
If you
could tweet that to @BrettRainbow, we will definitely get it.
@BrettRainbow is a subject for artists, not an artist himself. Come on, Brian. Get it right. I want to – so this comes from someone. I want this to be like the last time we ever talk about this because I feel like we're going to get it every week for a while because we're Americans and we have a lot of American listeners. This is from Carl Spurzum. He wants to know – basically he's asking, are we going to sign Christian Pulisic, and if we did, what's his best position on Spurs? I'm not really interested in his best position on Spurs because I just want to talk to you guys about how we're never going to sign Pulisic. I don't know, Ben, you want to take this one? You hate the U.S. men's national team kind of like I do these days.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with Ali and Eriksen and Kane up top, it's really hard to see how he fits, but I think Pochettino could make him into a pretty good left back.
You keep fucking that chicken, Ben. Brian, are Spurs going to sign Pulisic?
I mean, no. He already plays for Dortmund, and I don't see why he would come here. Isn't he also a Liverpool fan? Like, nah, if he's going
to
go,
don't they
somewhere?
Say that about like literally everyone who plays for like a team in Germany when they get linked to England? Like, oh, he's a Liverpool fan.
I mean, plus you know, Klopp,
everyone is
Dortmund.
A Liverpool.
Yeah. All right, Kaylee,
and then Arsenal are going to hire Tuchel, and he'll go follow him to Arsenal.
Oof. Which is worse? Okay, let's rephrase the question, Al. So as Americans who follow British soccer, which would you find more infuriating? And I don't even mean this because, like, I'm mad we didn't get him. I just don't want to deal with people talking about him like this. If Pulisic went to Liverpool or if Pulisic went to Arsenal? I think Liverpool is, like, 100% more annoying. Or it would be, like, I would get real sick of it real fast. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I kind of agree. I don't know. And I feel like the overlap of, like, U.S. team fans and Liverpool fans is probably, like, a bigger Venn diagram and a more annoying one.
Not what it used to be. There used to be a lot of Arsenal fans who supported the U.S. men's national team. It was really annoying. But not anymore. Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because, I mean, at least on Liverpool, he'd be mostly relevant to Spurs and competing with us. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Michael, you deal with more football fandoms on Twitter than the rest of us do. I think you have a better perspective for this. You're more familiar with respective team Twitters. Which would you find more insufferable?
I mean, it's Liverpool.
would you care to expound upon that answer?
I mean, it's Liverpool.
Lads, it's Liverpool.
Like, in the end, they are the most annoying fan base, and everyone knows this.
Like, I feel like it would be, like, 6 hours before we find some article about how, like, his dad, like, wrote a college newspaper article opposing Thatcher or something. It's just, they just make everything into their cultural struggle, no matter how tenuous the link is. And it's just, especially with Americans, it's so exhausting. Because I feel like Liverpool just brings out the absolute worst instincts in, like, American soccer fans. And it's just so awful. It's really bad. I don't know. Does anyone have anything else to add to this surely great question? Well, I think that's going to be it for this week on Wheeler Dealer Radio. We have a lot of very tired podcasters who probably need to get to bed. Ben, if people want to read about your exploits in London Town, where can they find you? Where on Instagram can they find you? Because everyone wants to know what your Instagram is.
Yeah, I mean, I finally started an Instagram account. It is at Brett Rainbow.
Great follow. It has all.
Yeah, you know, I think it just really captures the spirit of my experience over there in London. So, yeah, you can see all my wonderful pictures and my photo diary of my trip to the lane.
Brian, where can people find you on the internets?
You can subscribe to my YouTube channel, Brett Rainbow, where I talk about football tactics and obscure Australian basketball players.
There we go. Michael Cayley, where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, so mostly I am just in Slack, where I am Brett Rainbow, but you have to get admitted to our secret Slack. Otherwise, obviously, just send him connections on LinkedIn, and he'll get them.
And as always, you can find me on my Tumblr, which is tumblr.com/paintbrett like your French girls at tumblr.com.
It's a weird slip that you said paint me.
I mean, I don't know. Was it a slip? And on that auspicious note, for Ben, for Brian, for Michael, and of course for Brett.